CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to CityTalk's business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in business. And every Sunday I'll be taking a look at some of the week's big business stories and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider northwest region. This week, Prime Minister David Cameron was in town launching his Big Society initiative. What does this mean for Liverpool and the city's business community? Also, it was revealed that Liverpool is about to spend another £300,000 plus on the Shanghai Expo. Money well spent or folly in these days of austerity? And then the Merseys Partnership have made an early bid to become the lead agency in the new local economic partnerships that are due to be set to replace regional development agencies. Is TMP best placed to undertake this work, or are there more appropriate models out there? To discuss this and much more, I'm sure, I'm joined in the studio by Liverpool entrepreneur and the chairman of the Liverpool Conservative Association, Tony Caldera, political commentator and journalist Jim Hancock, and wordsmith extraordinaire, the MD of Aurora Communications, John Egan. Good morning, chaps.
Good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Tony, if I may come to you first, because obviously we had a visit this week from Mr. Cameron, the Prime Minister. I commented on Friday morning on a programme with Mick Coyle that the chances 20 years ago of a Conservative Prime Minister tipping up in Liverpool to launch anything other than Derek Hatton off the pier was probably fairly unlikely to happen. Why did Cameron choose Liverpool, do you think?
Well, David Cameron's been to Liverpool four times in the last 12 months or so, and he really has grown fond of the city. We've had several visits in the last 12 months when he was the leader of the opposition. And he enjoys the city. He's impressed by what's happened in the city. He knows that the city's gone forward, appreciates it, and thinks that Liverpool has an awful lot to offer. And I think it's important for listeners out there to understand that the Conservative Party and the City Council are going to look to work together. We don't believe there's any alternative. We can't go back to the 1980s. As you said, launching Derek Hatton would have probably been a great idea back in the 1980s. But, you know, Liverpool's grown up, the Conservative Party's changed and evolved, and hopefully between them they'll be able to sort things out.
Mm. John, you and I were both at that Big Society launch. What was your take on it?
It was a fascinating event, and it's quite difficult. I think to be slightly critical, and I don't want to be sound too jaundiced and too negative about it, because I'm not, but to be a little bit critical, I think it was a kind of mismatch between the sort of scale of ambition, you know, the big vocabulary, and anything that has the word big in front of it, you're almost like, you know, having to sort of anticipate that this is being put there for a reason, to sort of for emphasis. But there seemed to be a mismatch between the size of the ambition and then what we actually were told were the sort of exemplar projects moving forward, all of which seemed to be quite kind of, you know, menial, small-minded, very worthy, but effectively quite small scale in their execution. And therefore, you know, it left you wondering what is it about, and is this a grand philosophical project, which I think Cameron probably thinks it is. And I think one thing about Cameron is he seems to be quite sincere in his desire to kind of reinvent Tory social philosophy. But on the other hand, you wonder to what extent is this a PR stunt to kind of prove to people that we're not Margaret Thatcher. The symbolism of doing this in Liverpool, a woman who believed there was no such thing as society, will not only do we believe that there is, but we'll make it bigger and demonstrate that with five exclamation marks and a couple of underlinings in bold type, just to avoid any confusion. So I think from a PR presentational point of view, there was, you know, a strong reason to put it in Liverpool. I think when you heard some other Tory platform talking about it, that you just suspected that there was a lack of cohesion and consistency in what they thought they were signing up to. You did get the impression, and maybe it's got something to do with his kind of Dickensian Mr. Bumble persona, but you did think that perhaps Eric Pickles just saw this as a convenient way of going back to kind of 19th century Dickensian social order with kind of Victorian philanthropists looking after the deserving poor. It just did seem to be a slight discordancy between, if there's such a word, between the progressive justification for Big Society and the more pragmatic, taking up the slack in an environment where we have a much smaller state explanation, which appeared to be informing some of the things that that Mr. Pickles said.
Mm. I mean, I came away from the... I have to be honest, I was delighted that the Conservatives chose Liverpool to launch the initiative simply because I think it is good news for the city to be seen as positively as that. You know, the fact that the city is now seen as an arena where serious national politicians from whatever political party can come into town and launch whatever really is, for me, a very, very positive and progressive thing. But I do have to admit, I came away from the event wondering actually what big society means. I mean, I you know, listened for many years of New Labour politicians talking about social inclusion and strengthening the third sector and the voluntary sector and social enterprise and so on and so forth. Now, to me, there didn't seem to be a huge departure from some of that New Labour narrative to what David Cameron was saying. But then I do have to admit again, Tony, that Eric Pickle's view of the big society seemed to be a little bit different.
Well, you've got to start somewhere. You know, John has made a couple of comments and, of course, he's got his own opinions. But ultimately, the big society is a big project, and excuse the word big on two occasions, but it is a big project and you have to make a start. And the fact that he's chosen Liverpool to start that project is very important and very significant. I think a lot of people don't realise the progress that the Conservative Party's made in Liverpool over the last few years. It's quite a well-hidden fact that the Conservative Party vote across the five constituencies in Liverpool actually rose by 50% in this general election. This is not a Tory-free zone, although it is a Tory-free zone in terms of representation. In terms of support, Tory support in Liverpool is building. That cannot be denied. And David Cameron realises it, recognises it, and wants to he wants to help that. But in terms of what does it mean, there's sort of two key elements that I'd like to bring in. The first one is it is almost Citizen Smith-like. It's almost power to the people. And who would have thought that a Conservative government would have been preaching power to the people? And that's what they're looking to do. Because ultimately, in the last 13 years where we had a Labour administration, the emphasis was on councils making decisions, government making decisions, top-down targets, over-aggressive bureaucracy. And what we really need is people to actually be liberated from that. It's important that people get the chance to actually lead within their own communities and also make a difference in their own neighbourhoods. And the second thing I'd like to say is that everybody can make a difference. You know, there's not going to be the money around that there was back in the early noughties, because the money just simply isn't there. We have a huge budget deficit still, £150 million. It's going to take at least 5 years to get that back into kilter. There's not going to be the money out there. And I think that's probably what Eric Pickles was alluding to. He wasn't trying to dilute the big society message. He was just being realistic in the fact that the money isn't there. And unfortunately, people are going to have to start doing things that would have otherwise been done by the state in the Labour years. So basically, power to the people, and everybody can make a difference. And let's hope that everybody does make a difference. Fortunately, the noises that have come from the city leaders, as you mentioned at the TMP dinner, were very positive. I think the most, you know, Joe Anderson, credit to him, was, you know, he stood up and he welcomed the initiative and welcomed the Prime Minister to the city, which is great news for relationships between the Conservative Party and the Labour Party. And if the city gets behind it, and if we make it a success here in Liverpool, hopefully we'll get some more pilots, we'll get some more projects, and we'll be able to improve relationships even more. Mm. So let's all get behind it and let's have a go.
Jim Hancock. I was just about
Liverpool
to
Daily
ask
Post
you
columnist.
What,
yes.
What you?
Well, I mean, first of all, why did he come? Did he come because the week before he decimated the schools in Liverpool? Would that have any connection with why he came? I mean, it might be.
Well,
but
I don't think so. I think, you know, these things tend to be planned well in advance of that. I mean, again, I would have to say that on the particular issue of the schools agenda, I think the city have adopted a very mature approach in terms of lobbying to get at least some of that money back. And I know, again, that Joe Anderson had a conversation with Cameron about that very issue.
OK, well, leaving that aside, because, I mean, I think that may have had something to do with it, but I think also it was a recognition of the hard work that Tony's doing to get the Tories off the floor in the city. I mean, it is a place where they can see, with that sort of level of vote increase, there's some prospect of getting back.
But you isn't that a rather cynical way of looking at what was supposedly a launch of an initiative that was all-encompassing. You know, you've got a political leadership in Liverpool, which is Labour. You've got Phil Redmond on the platform, and Phil's political views are certainly left of David Cameron's, I'd have thought. And so was it simply the Conservatives want to start winning more support in Liverpool and wider Merseyside, or was Cameron actually genuine in saying we need to reach out to communities that in the past Conservative governments have alienated?
Powerful argument, Frank. Let's leave that question hanging in the air. I mean, what I want to do is to get down to the specifics of this. What does it actually mean? I mean, people want police on the beat. They want decent schools. They want their health centre better. They want their environment cleaned up. They want community facilities. Now, let's talk about how this big society thing is actually going to knit into that. Does anyone know how that's actually going to work? And crucially, where the money's coming from? And if communities enter into these things, there are legal obligations. You know, and to what extent are the public going to be governing these things and running them, and where they can have the time to do it, and what's the legal framework for any initiatives that they take? That's what I'd quite like. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but maybe you've been given some secret briefing.
As if I'd be so lucky, Jim. No, I think, you know, to answer your first point, I think it emphasises the point that we're all in this together, whether we like it or not. The country's in the state that it's in, the public finances are in the state that we're in. So whether you're in Liverpool, in London, in Newcastle, everyone's got a club together, and that's part of the message there. I think, you know, you're talking about where the money's coming from. Of course, that's always going to be the key issue in some circles. But I think the idea of creating the big society bank, where all the money that's been hanging around in dormant bank accounts, not doing anything at all, only earning a little bit of interest for its trustees, let's get some of that money into the communities, getting the improvements that you're talking about to people's lives. Let's actually use that dormant money and put it into the communities. It's funny, when I actually looked around when David Cameron said that, because that for me was a really important announcement, and I think an absolutely outstanding idea. And everybody in the room was nodding.
Tessa Jowles, you know, Tim.
Well, it's still a good idea. It's a good idea.
Well, they didn't get round to it.
Look, hang on, we don't have a monopoly on good ideas. If it's a good idea, let's build on it. It's a great idea.
I think there's another genesis for that idea, and perhaps another reason why Cameron chose Liverpool, and that is the intellectual origins of the big society. This is part of his kind of relationship with Philip Blond, who's his kind of, you know, guru, his Svengali, the man who's kind of teaching him about a new Tory philosophy, a new way of embracing social Toryism, red Toryism. And it was a very much watered down idea, because if you look at some of the things Philip Blond has been saying about red Toryism, he said, you know, nationalise the banks. He's been saying, you know, create a local investment bank out of the post office, or using better ways of using investment pension funds, local public sector pension funds to direct into developing local economy and capacity building, etc. So there's a very interesting intellectual adventure taking place, and I think Cameron's well plugged into that. I think Cameron is quite keen on exploring those ideas, but I think he's just struggling, I think, to articulate them. And struggling to put flesh on what are quite embryonic ideas. And I think there is the great opportunity for Liverpool, because I actually think if we take this big society launch as an invitation to take part in a conversation with government, I actually think we can probably fill in quite a few of the blanks. I actually think that it's the experience of cities and disadvantaged areas like Liverpool that, you know, with due respect, Tony, the Tories don't know an awful lot about. It's not their natural milieu. And you know, they don't have the hard experience of governing places like this or representing places like this. But I think he's, you know, I just get the impression the guy is genuinely open. And I think if Liverpool can be smart and intelligent and pragmatic and lateral in the way that it kind of enters into the kind of discourse of the big society and begins to rethink its aspirations by embracing some of those principles of participation, empowerment, bringing, you know, more services being delivered by social enterprises, being more inclusive, more decentralising, then I think we can do business with the Tories. Because I think in terms of fundamental social objectives towards equality, empowerment, justice, fairness, there's enough overlap to have a very fruitful and interesting conversation which could benefit the city and benefit the government. And that's why I don't want to be jaundiced. Because I think, you know, we really do need to have a totally different approach to how we talk to this government. And we shouldn't lapse into the sort of idea that we're talking to a Thatcherite Tory government and respond, you know, in that way to them. I think it's an invitation to take part with people who mean well, but haven't quite thought it through, and let's see where we end up talking.
And I think that phrase, you know, you've got to start somewhere, is probably one that we need to acknowledge as well. And, you know, Liverpool, in terms of the great heritage that we enjoy here and always celebrate, was by and large delivered by entrepreneurs in the private sector. Yeah. It wasn't delivered by big pots of public cash and public expenditure being spent in the city. The Three Graces didn't get Objective One money. You know, so it's those sort of, I think, initiatives, those sort of ideas, those sort of people that Cameron is genuinely reaching out to and trying to involve in this big society project. And again, I think as much as being in Liverpool was symbolic, the fact that Phil Redmond was a key personality launching this particular initiative was important as well. Jim, just looking at it from a political perspective, though, I've been somewhat surprised that Warren Bradley, who's now the opposition city leader in Liverpool, Liberal Democrat, has probably been more overtly critical than Joe Anderson, the Labour leader of the council. Warren is clearly concerned not just about some of the policies and cuts that Liverpool will have to endure through the coalition's policies, but equally about the point that Tony Caldera was making earlier. The Conservative support in this city is on the increase, and Lib Dems in the past, who have probably benefited from the support of Conservatives in city council elections, may now find themselves actually losing those votes. And equally, in other wards where Labour supporters have perhaps seen the Lib Dems as a better option than the Tories, that sort of image is starting to disappear. Is Warren right to be concerned?
I think so. I imagine Tony's already got his charts on his walls of his glistening new headquarters, not 100 miles from here, looking forward to next year's local elections and identifying those wards where precisely that can happen. Because as far as one can see at the moment, it is going to be, to say the least, a difficult election for the Liberal Democrats next spring. On a number of fronts. A, they'll have a record in national government to defend for the first time in 80-odd years. But also because if Tony's vote's gone up like that, the chances of actually people making things... You know, this is the problem Tony and his colleague Steve Fitzsimmons going way back and other luminaries of the Conservative Party.
Yeah. Alderman Longbottom.
Easy Tiger.
Alderman Salvage and all these people. Have had, you know, since those days, it's a wasted vote. I mean, in Liverpool, it's been the thing that's always been put against the Liberal Democrats elsewhere. It's a wasted vote. So that's the case. I mean, I also think at the moment, Warren is feeling very alienated about the schools thing, which has prompted him to make some very sort of cataclysmic predictions about what's going to happen to the Liberal Democrats. And also, of course, he's now in opposition. And I'm sure we're going to come on to talking about Shanghai in a minute. But for this final ceremony and the money, Warren, having promoted it and so on and said it was a great thing, is now saying he doesn't want to go any further. So I think it's part of a piece that Warren's now an oppositional councillor.
You see, if I was advising Warren, and I most certainly am not, I would actually be saying to him, there's an opportunity here. There is an opportunity for you to play a part in this building a mature relationship with central government, given the fact that part of that government is representing your political party. And therefore, on things like the cuts agenda in the schools, Warren ought to have been seen as a potential ally
The interesting figure, of course, is Richard Kemp, who is a Liverpool councillor, but is also a very leading figure in the local government association, and is even on the schools thing, has actually said that, you know, we've got to be realistic and so on, and the Liberal Democrat and the coalition cares about Liverpool and so on. A sharp division in approach between those two senior Liberal Democrat councillors.
It's going to take him a while, though, isn't it, John, to learn how to be a leader of an opposition, because he's only really known being in control.
No, I think you're right, Frank. And I think I think what's spectacular in the way that the administration has behaved since it took power is that it's become very mature very quickly, and it's adjusted very, very quickly to the requirements and to the demands of having to have an intelligent relationship with government and even responding to, you know, what might be seen as cataclysmic provocations. And you referred to cataclysmic in the context of the BSF cancellation. There was a little bit of intuitive body language and gesturing, and you know, that was to be expected and entirely justified and necessary. But I think the fundamental disposition has been pragmatic. You know, let's get on, let's find a solution, let's be imaginative, let's be entrepreneurial. And I think you're right. I think that it's all of Liverpool needs to learn to adapt to new politics. And it doesn't matter whether you're in opposition or whether you're in the administration. I think we need a new skill set, a new language, a new set of navigational equipment to work out how we behave and cope in this, uncharted territory. But I think they have got to be part of that process, that bridge to talk to and represent the city's interests with government that they're, you know, umbilically connected to.
Were you expecting a more positive response to the coalition government from the local Liberal Democrats?
I think what you've got to remember is that you can only play the hand that you're dealt. And ultimately, David Cameron and Nick Clegg so far have played the hand that they've been dealt very well, in my opinion. I know I would say that, wouldn't I? But, you know, nobody expected the outcome. Although everyone knew there was going to be a hung parliament, nobody knew how the chips would fall. Nobody knew how the votes would land when they were counted. Nobody knew who would have the box hand in the negotiations. And ultimately, both David Cameron and Nick Clegg have been very pragmatic. They've been very open. One thing about David Cameron is basically you get what you see. You know, he's genuinely looking to improve the country and to make a difference that nobody else right now can make. And I think if Nick Clegg has got that, keeps his pragmatic approach, resists the cataclysmic provocations, as the guys have talked to them, which inevitably will come. Local politicians have got to just make sure that they are pragmatic, they are realistic, they know what's actually happening in terms of the the budgets and the finances and the way that things are going to have to be done to deal with the deficit. And if they can all be grown up about it, and you alluded to it very well about throwing Derek Hatton in the Mersey, you know, the Labour Party's grown up about it.
Derek wouldn't have been worried about that because he reckons he can walk on it.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Hopefully the tide would have been out. But one more thing, Jim, just one last thing. I mean, you've got to also put into perspective what actually has happened, what actually did happen last week. You know, on the Monday, the Prime Minister was in Cornerstone House. On Tuesday, he was in the White House with Barack Obama. That proves that this city is moving, that the Conservatives, the Lib Dems and the Labour Party locally are all getting together. We are talking. We've got to just keep talking and just keep getting on with it. Because what's going to happen in the next few years with budget cuts, which are inevitably going to come, they have to come, they've been announced, we'll hear even more at the Comprehensive Spending Review on October the 20th. But, you know, let's not get hysterical about it. We know it's coming. Let's just get on with it. And hopefully between us, we can find a way through this.
Jim, you were at Prime Minister's Questions on Wednesday, and Tony was suggesting there that Nick Clegg hadn't put a foot wrong. It wasn't my view of that particular session.
No, absolutely. I mean, it was an historic session. It was the first time a Liberal had taken Prime Minister's Questions since Lloyd George in 1922. I mean, the other historic thing was that, of course, with no deputy leader, Jack Straw stood in as well. I mean, the first thing was that Jack asked a question about Afghanistan. You know, was our withdrawal conditional or was it an absolute deadline? And Clegg gave a very vague answer. Then Jack moved on to Sheffield Forgemasters. And when Clegg got up again, he had to say, before I answer that, and he'd obviously been, someone had desperately whispered in his ear, you know, he tried to clarify the position. But I don't think that remains clarified. He then called the Iraq war illegal. Which, I mean, he's now Deputy Prime Minister. He's got to be very careful about that. Now, I mean, it's easy to be critical, because it was his first Prime Minister's Questions, but not a great performance. Watching from the galleries.
If you take all of this from a business perspective and you look at where we are as a city and a city region, the one thing that the Conservatives and the Lib Dems in government have decided upon, of course, is the abolition of regional development agencies, replacing them with local economic partnerships. And again, there was a dinner earlier this week where the Mersey Partnership launched an early bid, I think it has to be said, to suggest that they actually are the body that ought to be in the driving seat of the new models that are established. And again, John, I wonder whether from a business point of view, you would see TMP as the right model for that job?
I think it would perhaps be a little too obvious and a little too convenient simply to say, yep, LEPs, here's one we prepared earlier, and simply wheel out the same organisation, the same staff, the same personalities, the same mindset, the same modus operandi, and say, look, done deal. If that was to happen, it would make a complete mockery. Whatever you think this government, what they're doing is right or wrong, they're the government, they've got a mandate, they have some legitimacy, and they're saying there should be a fresh approach. And I think they're probably, you know, we have to be fresh in the way that we approach the whole structure, the remit, the constitution, the geographic terrain that's covered by the LEP. And I just do not think it would be good enough simply to transfer these powers and responsibilities to TMP. I think there'll be serious issues around its own legitimacy, its track record, the need for cultural change, and what you do, and the other agenda, which is you know, moving in parallel, which is a locally determined agenda, to do with the role of Liverpool Vision, and how the city region should promote itself to be more competitive, to be more successful in winning inward investment. Because, you know, without any disrespect to the individuals concerned within those organisations, if it's performance related pay, you wouldn't actually be paying them any bonuses. We haven't simply been as successful as other major cities in bringing big blue chip inward investors into the city region. And therefore, you know, I think everybody has got to accept that we need a different approach. We need a fresh approach. And we need to start from scratch. We need to start learning some lessons from other places and reconfiguring the architecture to be more effective and more focused.
I would absolutely agree with that analysis. I mean, I think there's two specific things I would also add to that, really. The first is that we ought not to be caught up simply in the geographical boundaries that are set by civil servants in Westminster. And I think one of the things that the Cameron agenda enables us to do is actually be a bit more flexible, be a bit more nimble. I mean, you know, we're twin with Shanghai, we're twin with New York. We haven't got a business relationship with the Isle of Man. We haven't got a business relationship with North Wales. We haven't got a business relationship with Cheshire. Yeah. You know, for me, it's actually about reaching out beyond the geographical boundaries, as I say, those local authority geographical boundaries that have been set, and saying we can be a bit more imaginative. And Liverpool, as the major driver of the economy in this area, should be at the forefront of that debate and should be at the forefront of making those links and connections.
Somebody, I can't remember who it was, came up with a beautiful phrase, which in effect represents the natural constituency of interest as opposed to the artificially constructed civil service imposition, and that's the Bay Area. Mm. You know, Liverpool Bay is a constituency of interest, of cultural interest, of geographic interest, of human connectivity. Mm. And it does go out as far as, I don't know, maybe Landod, no. It does actually encompass the Isle of Man.
It goes out as far as John. It goes out as far to places that want to do business with Liverpool,
absolutely.
And Liverpool now, as
absolutely.
The attack brand, is in a stronger position as it's ever been in. And the second point I'd make, and just picking up on something that you alluded to, is this isn't about personalities. You know, there's some great personalities in all the various agencies and organisations that are involved in the existing structures.
Up to a point, Lord Copper.
No, it's not about... It can't be, Jim, because I mean, it's got to be... Well, I'll tell you what the Mersey Partnership and others are making the mistake of doing. They're making a mistake of saying, it's got to be us, it's got to be us, it's got to be us. And they haven't come up with a strategy yet to say, it's got to be us, because actually we can deliver that strategy. And the problem with the review that's been set in Trail, actually, is that we're looking at what organisations should survive instead of what policies, what strategies should survive. And I'm now on my high horse. We're only going to continue this debate after the break. Join us in a second.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Well, before the break, we were talking about the future of local economic partnerships, who should be managing them, who should be running them, and existing agencies in the city that are involved in the delivery of economic development, marketing and inward investment promotion. Jim Hancock was going to make a case, I think, as to why some of the existing structures actually maybe do have a role to play.
Well, I was not necessarily going to say that. I was just trying to respond to your point about the personalities don't matter. I mean, it's just moving on to this local enterprise partnership thing. You've got Jeff Green, who's a very forceful, colourful and new player on the political scene on Merseyside, and he's in this city-region partnership. But I think things are being made up now. But he was given a pretty rough ride by the Labour members of that that partnership just after the general election. And that is not the spirit of the city region. It is not meant to be an ultra-partisan thing. And the fact that we've now got two new Labour people in it, Mary Rimmer in St Helens and Joe Anderson, I think they've got to realise that Jeff has actually got a line to the government which they would do well to exploit. And, you know, I mean, I floated even with him earlier last week, although he denied it, you know, that Wirral's membership of Merseyside, you know, a lot of people have never been happy with it. And this brings me to my next point, which is in relation to all this, we need to get our act together on Merseyside, because I don't detect that we're fully up to speed. Two things. One, as usual, Greater Manchester, their LEP is well down the track. Everything's submissions have got to be in by the 6th of September. But we also, as I understand it, have a Cheshire-Warrington LEP. So we're talking about spreading our wings and so on, but we need to be fairly careful that other people aren't spreading their wings into us. We do need to get our act together here.
Mm. Tony, just coming to you, because obviously as a businessman, we're all interested in how these local economic partnerships are going to be set up. Again, the intention of government is that they ought to be private-led, private sector-led entities. And, you know, just to clarify the point I was making, I wasn't saying personalities don't matter. What I was saying was personalities shouldn't matter more than strategy, more than an agenda that you're laying out. And the sort of things that the Conservatives, the coalition government, are asking us to do, actually there's room for all of those personalities to play a part, but maybe in a different way to the roles in which they're currently adopting. But Tony, as I say, as a businessman, how do you think LEPs should look and feel in the greater Liverpool region?
Well, taking my Conservative chairman's hat on and putting my entrepreneur's hat on, the first thing that you can see is there's an awful lot of duplication. You know, we do need to rationalise the amount of money that's spent in the Quango Arena in Merseyside. That has to happen. There needs to be a consolidation, rationalisation. From an entrepreneur's perspective, you really want a one-stop shop. You want it to be nice and simple and easy. And that leads me on to saying that really that's what we've got to look at it. We've got to look at it from the eyes of an inward investor. We've got to look at it, you know, talking about blue chip companies coming into the Mersey region and Liverpool as a city. We have to think what's best for those inward investors. You go to Shanghai, and I know we're moving on to Shanghai in a minute, but you see all the different agencies and all the different associations all linked with the different with the sponsorship of the event. Now, who as a Chinese inward investor do you go and see? It's overcomplicated. There's too much duplication. We need to do it. And it's got to be private sector led. I agree that organisations such as Downtown Liverpool, such as the Chamber of Commerce, such as TMP, to be fair, which have a lot of their income stream coming, or the majority of their income stream coming from the private sector, they are in a better place to be than some others. However, you are right, you can't just have the usual suspects. What you don't want to do is you don't want to just have jobs, the same old jobs for the boys. You need a rationalised system that works best for the inward investor. And then to go with that, hand in hand, the money that is being saved there needs to go back to the entrepreneurs and to the business people in the form of lower taxes, in the form of less regulation. And in, you know, as David Cameron said, and as he's saying, and as he said in New York this week, Britain's open for business. You know, come to Britain, invest in Britain. And we need to be on that bandwagon, whether it's with David Cameron or whether it's somebody else, to say, don't just come to Britain, come to Liverpool, come to Merseyside, come here. You know, that's really what we're all about. That's what these bodies and these agencies are set to do. So let's just go back to first base and think, well, what exactly are these agencies set up here to do? They're here to help business, help entrepreneurs and help inward investors. Let's put them at the heart of the agenda, not about who said what and who's the most important and who keeps a job and who doesn't. Let's look at the inward investors. This city and this region has an absolutely
golden opportunity coming up with the Shanghai links, with links in New York and links in the Isle of Man, as you gentlemen also mentioned. So let's take advantage of that. Let's all work together to do it, but let's do it in a cost-effective way that's focused on the customer, who is the entrepreneur or the inward investor. Mm.
The majority of income, by the way, for a number of those organisations you mentioned, sadly isn't coming from the private sector, but that's an argument for another day. John, coming back to you, in terms of the bigger picture here, because, again, I'm a bit concerned, you see, that we're all getting carried away with simply putting everything into LEPs. You know, Jim's already said that Warrington and Cheshire are probably well on the way to developing a model there. Greater Manchester, well, we know what's going to happen in Greater Manchester. Howard's going to get everyone in a room and it'll be sorted in an hour. So that's easy. It's easy for places like Manchester to get sorted. But I'm not talking about simply having a local enterprise partnership that is fit for purpose. I'm talking about Liverpool actually establishing a more ambitious, proactive agenda to reach out beyond the LEP. The LEP almost could become that model, that vehicle that helps us reach out to the Isle of Mans, to the Cheshires, to the Warringtons. And by the way, when it works, to Manchester as well. Because in the absence of a regional structure, then there are going to be things that the North West has to cooperate on. And again, I would like to see Liverpool. I would want to see Liverpool at the heart of those debates, at the heart of those discussions. And as I say, at the moment, I think there's far too much discussion about let's see which organisations we want to rip up, rather than the vision.
I'd say there are three things three constituent elements in getting it right. And in terms of two of them, we've had a marked and tragic deficit. And in terms of one of them, we have an equally tragic surplus. And the one that we have a surplus of is structures, bureaucracies, apparatchiks. And it's down to the fact that we haven't had an economy. And consequently, we've had experiment after experiment performed on the city region in terms of urban regeneration.
And no one took them away when they failed.
So we now have this enormously complex, Kafkaesque, self-serving, nomenclatura. It's an Eastern European model of governance that operates
What's that in English, John?
I don't know. But it has a tremendous capacity for self-survival. It defends itself against any kind of attack. What we haven't had is entrepreneurialism, a private sector economy that's provided the kind of civic drive and vision and energy that created the wealth and created the city in the first place. Going back to your earlier comments, Frank. And the other thing we haven't had is leadership. And the thing that Manchester has got is it's got the balance right between those three ingredients. And I would say maybe this is a typical comment for a PR person, but the fundamental thing you need to keep those three things together is a narrative. You actually need a story that everybody is signed up to. So there is a clear vision. And that's the kind of fuel that drives it. It's a thing that kind of keeps the dynamic of that, of those relationships moving. And fundamentally, it doesn't make a halfpenny's difference how this LEP is structured, or who's in it, or who's resourcing it, or whatever kind of bureaucratic constitution you come up, if it's just simply another piece of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And if it's not motivated and enlivened by a clear vision, a set of ambitions, an agenda, the kind of vocabulary of ambition that is really what makes Manchester work and what its leadership has been so successful at articulating, and both Jim, locally and externally.
Jim, we were at an event downtown organised over in Preston, A Tale of Three Cities. David Waitsmith was on the panel, and Mike Emmerich from Manchester's Economic Commission. And Mike was saying that very thing, wasn't he? The language that Manchester uses, the fact that they can all feel comfortable as part of this Manchester family. And they all talk about the Manchester family over there. It's not something that they see as being something that, we can all have a little bit of a giggle and laugh. They all say we're part of the Manchester family.
Yeah, and he developed that rather amusingly, Salford, didn't he?
And, absolutely.
Because he said, we're not as if we're a family that comes together at Christmas once a year and we have to be really polite to each other. We're in each other's backyards all the time. We're having to sort out mutual problems.
It's just like Corrie.
Bumping into each other, and we have rows. And, of course, the biggest row is over the congestion charge, but it didn't break up the family. Mm.
And I thought, in terms of explaining how Manchester had managed to really get its act together through a long period of time, 10, 20 years, we mentioned the fact that people in Wigan, people in Rochdale, They're proud of their heritage. They're equally as proud as people in Knowsley and Sefton. In fact, probably more so, because the more historical as towns. But they buy into this Manchester brand. And the failure I'm seeing at the moment across, and I hate the word, but across Merseyside, if we want to continue to use that term, is that we're still reluctant in some parts to see Liverpool and accept Liverpool as the brand, as the attack brand. And that's why, John, a slight fallout with you. I think Liverpool Bay, Greater, I'd drop it all. It's just Liverpool for me. It's not Liverpool Bay, it's Liverpool. Liverpool is the brand. Liverpool is what we have to build on. And we've got to have the confidence, the leadership, the ambition in the city and in the city's strategy to bring people along with us. And that's what Manchester's got.
I think that might, I don't want to speak for him, but that might give Jeff Green in Wirral some challenges, you know. I mean, I think he wants to be part of it, but I think he'd have challenges with some of that.
But I think it's how, it's you know, what we need is a big Liverpool, isn't it?
Yep.
We need a definition of Liverpool that is actually perhaps slightly different to the one that I think turns Jeff Green off and turns other people in the Wirral off, people in Sefton, people in St. Helens, people who watch stereotypical images of the city outside. Why don't people in Wirral want to identify with Liverpool? Is it because they've got some intrinsic kind of genetically determined phobia about Scousers? Not really, because actually they came from the same stock. Mm. It's the brand. It's everything that goes with it. It's the accumulated negativity that, you know, we've still not quite managed to diffuse it. And therefore, it is fundamentally important that the Liverpool brand is now articulated in a much more expansive, inclusive, outward-facing, forward-facing way that, you know, that accommodates the breadth of interests and the breadth of aspirations across the city.
Maybe business leadership, and this is what I'd like, with your permission, ask Tony about it. With the business leadership, you know, if business leaders are prepared to come forward and give their time, which I know isn't easy, maybe some of this sort of political toxicity can be removed, because,
yeah,
you know, if we can unite, you know, with the leader, if the leadership and the government require it, and in many ways rightly so, it to be business led, maybe, you know, that will take some of that away, because people will be trying to run a business, bring in jobs, and not be politicians in that identifiable sense.
Well, it goes back to what we were saying earlier about it must be private sector led. Whatever happens, it's got to be the private sector, it's got to be the investors, it's got to be the entrepreneurs, it's got to be the business leaders who lead this. But ultimately, this is a huge opportunity and a huge challenge for Liverpool or Merseyside or whatever you want to, however you want to define the city region, in the fact that if, depending on what happens with the final discussions over the NWDA, but should the referee in inverted commas be taken away and we're fighting against the Manchesters for regional investment, then what we need to do is we need to make sure that this city raises its game. Its politicians, its business leaders, its organisations, we are going to have to raise our game as a city. But what that does give us is an opportunity. For example, you had the ridiculous situation where there was a situation where the regional development agency thought that the cluster for electronic games was in Media City, when everybody knows it's in Wavertree.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
really, and there'll be other ways where we would have benefited as a city region, as a city and a city region as well. So we've just got to make sure that Liverpool raises its game, it's as fit as it can be, and that we look forward and we look outward and not inward. All these discussions about which partnerships and who stays, that's great, but let's stop looking inwards and let's look outwards. Let's work together. Let's get this sorted quickly from a businessman's perspective. I don't care whether it's an LEP or whether it's a NWDA or whether it's a, you know, Mersey partnership or whoever it is. From a businessman's perspective, taking my political hat off and putting my entrepreneur's hat on, all I want to know is I want business advice. I want to invest in the region. How do I do it? Where do I go? Nice and simple, and let's keep it. And then when we finally decide on what we are going to do, let's all get behind it. You know, whether the LEP is based around the TMP model or based around some other model, we've all got to get behind it, stop bickering and look outwards and inwards, because there's going to be no referees anymore. We're going to be fighting for ourselves. But that is also a fabulous opportunity for the city region, because we have got a lot to offer
the
world.
I mean, Rod Holmes at that dinner did do a magnificent tour d'horizon for continuing to use these various words.
You lot should speak English, you know.
Of the things that the huge...
If anyone out there's got a dictionary that they can send in to me, I'd be very, very grateful.
Culture, Darsbury, the liner terminal, all these sort of things, the culture of this city, you know, huge, huge pluses that we've got going forward. You know, the elements are there.
But every time they, you know, this impressive litany is you know, pronounced, it's continually surprising because somehow there's a kind of discord between this and the kind of mental baggage that we carry around and the dreary mediocrity in the way that the city presents itself externally. And it is fundamentally a communication exercise.
Do you think...
Your brand sorted, Liverpool.
Do you think Shanghai has been mediocre? No,
I do. Right. Because what have we done? We've gone to Shanghai to remind people, and who are we reminding? Are these the people whose perceptions we radically need to transform in terms of changing the prospects of the city? I don't know whether they are. I'm not sure about that. But we've gone out there, and to be honest with you, from what I've seen, and I've not been there, but I've seen the media coverage of it, and I've seen the creators for the pavilion, we appear to be telling people what they already know. Guess what, guys? The Beatles come from Liverpool, and so does Liverpool Football Club. We're not really telling them what they don't already know. We're almost reinforcing that you know, the stereotypical brand that really is the millstone that we're going to try and escape from.
I'd be interested to hear your views, Tony, on that, because obviously you've got a big operation over in China, and we've spoken previously about the positive things in terms of Liverpool's presence in Shanghai. Have we taken as much advantage of that opportunity as we ought to have had?
Well, I think we are taking advantage of it. I would disagree with John on that, in the fact that the Chinese nation has the most to invest as a potential inward investor for this region, and the people, the Shanghainese, the different areas, different regions of China, they're looking in many cases to start investing this wealth and diversifying their own risk and portfolio. If we're at the front of their mind, if we're actually there and say, well, actually, why don't you come to Liverpool and invest something here? Why don't you come to Merseyside, or, you know, to this region and do it? There's more wealth being created in China than anywhere in the world at the moment, and they're going to want to invest it in other places. Liverpool has to be front, right and centre of the biggest investors. I mean, David Cameron's gone to New York. I bet you can bet your bottom dollar he'll be in Shanghai and in Beijing in the not-too-distant future. He knows where the money is, and he's doing his salesman's job, and good luck to him, and that's what he should be doing.
OK, so two things. One, are the key investors, are these the people who are going to the Liverpool Pavilion at the Shanghai Expo? Is it actually an effective piece of investment in terms of, you know, marketing collateral aimed at, you know, potential Chinese investors? It might be, it might not be, I don't know. I'll tell you what, though, from what I've seen, the message that we're communicating at the Shanghai Expo isn't that this is a vibrant, ambitious, commercial city reasserting itself on the international stage as a major mercantile player. It's we're an interesting branch of the light entertainment industry. And that's the tragic kind of failure of
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. What you've also got to understand, John, as well, is that you have an emerging Chinese middle class who all aspire to send their children to Western universities, who all aspire to travel globally because they've not been able to travel before. They've never taken a holiday outside of China. In fact, some of them have never even taken a holiday outside of Shanghai. They're looking for places to go.
Maybe.
If you can inspire those people not only to invest here, but to visit here, to send the kids here to be educated, to look at our culture and to start supporting Liverpool or Everton and buying the strips, to buy into... To our city's culture and our city's philosophy and ideas on life. It's a huge, huge opportunity. And I really do hope that everybody in the city, we're there now. We can't argue whether we should be there or not. We are. I can see where Joe Anderson's coming from, because he's probably thinking, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. We may as well do this properly. And I sympathise in some respects, because he's now... His head's on the block. This has now got to work. Before he could say, oh, well, actually, Warren, this was all your idea, Mr. Bradley, and it's not worked. His head's now on the block. He's got to make sure this works, and I'm sure that he'll be out there with the rest of the delegations for the Liverpool Day in October and making sure that it does work. And frankly, forget politics. I wish him all the best. It's the best thing that can happen for this city in terms of awareness within Shanghai and within the Chinese business community and the Chinese population at large, because there's lots of people going, and if you've only got to inspire, I don't know, 0.1% of the people who turn up to come here, and there'll be tens of millions of pounds come back to the region, and the investment will pay itself off hundreds of times over. Touch wood. Let's hope so. Anyway,
but will the business community chip in for this? I mean, you know, we've heard so much about
business community.
Business led.
Yeah, the business community are. I mean, Grant Thornton have sponsored things over there. I think Deloitte or one of the other big four accountants have as
Plexus
well. Brabner's, Chase Street. I mean, there's been a number of professional firms from Liverpool who, let's face it, the worst possible time to approach the private sector for investment and sponsorship of that sort. And yet the private sector have tipped up. I think, you know, the idea of the £300,000 additional investment, I tend to agree with Tony. If you're going to do, if you're going to do it, you've got to do it right. And if the leadership of the city feel as though that additional expenditure and investment is required, then it's got to be spent. I also think that Joe Anderson has played a blinder in terms of saying the structure that's been erected over in Shanghai won't just be thrown away. That will come back to the UK and hopefully go to London as a Liverpool embassy in the capital city. So it's a long-term investment. In fact, that was...
I'm not sure about the word embassy, though, Frank. Do we really want to tell people that we're a different country?
People's Republic. Question.
The People's Republic.
Well, Phil Redmond told David Cameron
that. I know he did, but are we...
But you know what I'm saying. I think in terms of putting something in London to market the city, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. Calling it an embassy probably is.
Well, I think when the phrase was coined by Guy Wallace, there was more than a hint of irony, and I think the point he was making was actually it's about having a business presence in the city where most investment decisions are made and most governmental decisions are made. And you know, if the Isle of Man has a quotes embassy in London, we seem to be coming back to the Isle of Man, don't we?
Merseyside sites when you went down the escalator at Euston.
I think there's a lot to be said for it. I think it was an idea John Wrightley has identified with good old Mr. Wallace, and Joe Anderson has picked it up and ran with it.
Tony, you nearly convinced me, you know, and you could be right and I could be wrong. It could be just me being a killjoy and a professional cynic, which I try not to be, but it's hard to fight nature. But what I think is really important is that we just don't go away having a bet about who was right and who was wrong about this, and then we make the same mistake in 10 years' time when another opportunity comes along. I think if there are fairly, you know, huge claims being made about the windfall benefits that are going to come back from the investment in Shanghai, that is properly evaluated, and that we don't get sort of like swept along in the hype, so no matter what the actual results are, it enters into the kind of collective mythology that this was Liverpool's finest hour, or equally, that this was another, you know, catastrophic piece of self-indulgence. I just think we've got to be much more disciplined about measuring how effective this was. And there's got to be some robust mechanism for sort of like being able to calculate how much investment has come out directly from that significantly big expenditure, and, you know, how much tourism has been generated and how many additional students have come as a consequence of it. And let's measure it. And if it turns out to be a well worthwhile piece of investment, then congratulations to everybody involved.
You're right.
If it doesn't, let's learn our lessons.
There has to be accountability, but ultimately China's a future.
Okay, Tony, on that hopefully relatively positive note, and I'm sure this is a subject that we will return to in the coming weeks and months. I think the Shanghai Expo ends over in the autumn, am I right?
Yeah.
So, as I say, it's a subject that we will return to and discuss, I'm sure, a further length. Well, that's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talks Business here on City Talk 105.9. Thanks to my guests, Tony Caldera, Jim Hancock and John Egan. Thanks to the producer, Jonathan Dean, and thank you for listening. City Talks Business will be back the same time, same place next Sunday, hosted by the Downtown Liverpool events manager, Roger Jonas, as I take a well-earned break. Until then, have a great week. And don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.